Today's reading is from Matthew chapter 10, verses 16 to 33, and that's on page 815 of the Church Bibles. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it is not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child, and children will rise against parents and have them put to death, and you'll be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? So have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light. And what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. And do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs on your head are numbered. Fear not, therefore, you are of more value than many sparrows. So everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven.
Beth, thanks for reading and great to be with you. Just in case I don't know you, my name's Sam. I lead the 11 a.m. service. And please do keep Matthew 10 open in front of you so we can look at it together. That will really help. Great. Well, I thought I'd start today with a parable. And it goes like this. A man had 100 sheep. But most of those sheep had gone astray and were lost. Now, this was very bad because all around the pasture where the man grazed his sheep, there lived hungry wolves. So the man chose 12 of the sheep and he sent them out with bells around their neck to attract attention to find all the lost sheep and to bring them back. I wonder what you think happened to the 12 sheep. Did they not get eaten by the wolves? Truly, I say to you, they did get eaten. The end. I've called it the parable of the rubbish shepherd because he knew the danger and he still sent them out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Surely a good shepherd would never have done that. Well, I don't need to build the suspense. Our very first verse today shows you that I am wrong. That is a bad parable. Don't listen to it. That's why Jesus writes the parables, not me. But it did strike me as an odd choice. So Matthew 10, verse 16. Behold, I am sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves. Last week, Jesus sent out the 12 disciples to do a job. And if you look just up the page at verse 6, you can see what that was. He told them to go to the lost sheep of the house of Israel, and to proclaim as they go, saying, the kingdom of heaven is at hand. Jesus has described the crowds as harassed and helpless, like sheep without a shepherd. And so here is his solution. Pick some of the sheep and send them out to find the ones that are lost. But I did ask the question, like, is that good shepherding or bad shepherding? Is this apparently very dangerous plan really the best Jesus could come up with? Hopefully, if you've been paying attention to the rest of the service, it won't come as a surprise that we're talking about the topic of persecution. That targeted hatred for being a disciple of Jesus. And it is in the first instance about the 12 disciples, this passage. They're the ones that Jesus is sending out. But by the end of the passage, I think it has clearly widened out. So if you just take a look at verse 32, everyone who acknowledges me before men, and verse 33, whoever denies me before men. So I think most of it is true for us today as well. I wonder, are you okay with that? With the fact that affiliating with Jesus brings some of his hostility your way? Are you okay with being implicated by association and sharing the backlash that his teaching generates? Well, before we answer, let's see, what does the Good Shepherd have to say for himself? First, he tells his disciples, persecution is actually going to be God's pulpit. Persecution is actually going to be God's pulpit. There's no hint of embarrassment from Jesus about what they're about to face. He's not trying to hide it or downplay it. He's preparing them for it. Behold, I'm sending you out as sheep in the midst of wolves, so be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues, and you'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake. There's no doubt that the danger is real and certain. And we probably get that just from the animals that Jesus mentions, wolves and sheep. You know, they're not the best of friends, actually, as it turns out. Wolves, I think, are famous for being the bad guys. The three little pigs and the big bad wolf. Little Red Riding Hood and the big bad wolf. Oh, Grandmama, what big teeth you have. All the better to eat you with. Wolves in the Bible are ravenous and fierce. They devour and devastate. They tear apart their prey, shedding blood and destroying lives. Whereas sheep in the Bible, what are they famous for? Well, wandering off, getting lost, scattering, being slaughtered. They are easy prey. And Jesus says these sheep will need to fight against the stereotypes. Be wise as serpents and innocent as doves. Because there's no doubt the danger is real and certain. Listen to how he talks about it. They will deliver you over to courts and flog you. You will be dragged before governors and kings. When they deliver you over, you will be hated when they persecute you. It's all when, not if, when. And I don't think it's hard, actually, for us to identify who the wolves are, either. So Jesus has been consistently pointing them out all the way through, the scribes and the Pharisees. Notice it's they're going to deliver them over to courts and flog them in their synagogues. So we're definitely talking about the religious leaders here. The persecution comes from the religious establishment. Those hypocrites, they've been called. Those false prophets, who back in chapter 7, Jesus even said, come in sheep's clothing, but inwardly are ravenous wolves. So the position of shepherd, it wasn't vacant before Jesus turned up. It was just being done by wolves. But now that the good shepherd has come, maybe things should be different. Why aren't the sheep being kept safe? Knowing about persecution and forewarning them about persecution, that still probably isn't enough to justify Jesus' decision to endanger the sheep by sending them out. There needs to be a purpose in it. So verse 17 again. Beware of men, for they will deliver you over to courts and flog you in their synagogues. You'll be dragged before governors and kings for my sake to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. When they deliver you over, do not be anxious how you are to speak or what you are to say, for what you are to say will be given to you in that hour. For it's not you who speak, but the Spirit of your Father speaking through you. Persecution is actually God's pulpit. It's his plan to proclaim the kingdom of heaven. You'll have to indulge me another Harry Potter reference today. There's a moment in the Harry Potter books where the whole wizarding world is treating Harry as an attention-seeking liar, the boy who lies. And that's because he's telling the truth about the return of Lord Voldemort, and they don't like it. In order to get his side of the story across, he gives a kind of secret tell-all interview, which gets published in a wizard magazine. When Hogwarts High Inquisitor Dolores Umbridge learns about this, she writes Educational Decree Number 27, which will expel any student found in possession of Harry's interview. But here's the bit that I love. Harry's friend Hermione is delighted at this news because, as she explains, there was no better way to make sure that every single person in the school read Harry's interview, the best thing you could have done to make sure everybody read it was to ban it. And it turns out that's absolutely right. She's got it bang on. The persecution backfires completely and gets the truth out much more quickly, and people start to believe. Well, persecution is God's way of getting the truth out. Not just something he knew about in advance or reluctantly accepted. It's actually part of his plan for proclaiming the kingdom of heaven. Do you remember last week? Jesus told them to go nowhere among the Gentiles. That sounded a bit weird. They were told only to go to the house of Israel. And it's not that Jesus didn't have compassion for the Gentiles too. It's not that the kingdom of heaven isn't for the Gentiles too. It's just that Israel was the first stop on the campaign trail, and the religious leaders of Israel would unintentionally provide the platform to reach the Gentiles. You will be dragged before governors and kings for my sake, to bear witness before them and the Gentiles. So in the courtroom, the criminal dock will be turned into their pulpit to preach from. The audience with the King of Israel becomes an audience with the King of Heaven. Because verse 20, it won't be them who speak, but the Spirit of their Father speaking through them. Isn't God clever the way he set this up? And it's really important for Matthew's original readers. We know that the Pharisees are the bad guys, because we've read the Bible before. And it's really obvious as you read it, the Pharisees are the bad guys. But Jesus is replacing their religious leaders, the respected religious leaders of the time, the people who teach them the word of God. It's a big deal. And now these 12 disciples become the new heads of the house of Israel, their new teachers. So when they are arrested for blasphemy, the early church needs to know why that's not a reason to panic. First perspective shift on persecution, it's actually going to be God's pulpit. Second perspective shift, persecution is a family thing. Look down with me again at verse 21. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child. And children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. But the one who endures to the end will be saved. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. A disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher, and the servant like his master. If they have called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? Persecution is a family thing. And I nearly didn't use the heading because it's sort of a play on words and I don't want it to sound flippant. It's a family thing because some of the persecution, maybe the most painful, will come from your closest relationships. We try to pray regularly for the persecuted church. I was reading the Open Doors website this week and read about Aisha, who is a Christian convert in Somalia, who were number two on the World Watch list. Aisha's husband left her when she became a Christian. Her family tried to take her children away, and then she was brutally stabbed. And this is what her uncle told the authorities. This is what he said. We are thankful to those women who tried to kill her. We are thankful to those women who tried to kill her. Those are the words of her uncle. Jesus is not exaggerating when he says that people will die for this. We think 11 of the 12 apostles were martyred. And I don't know whether their biological families were involved or not, but certainly other Israelites, people from within the house of Israel, their own people, their brothers, turned against them. Verse 23 is a bit confusing. Maybe you thought so. When they persecute you in one town, flee to the next. For truly I say to you, you will not have gone through all the towns of Israel before the Son of Man comes. Partly that says persecution is going to keep the gospel moving on. That's the reason they'll keep going to the next town to proclaim the kingdom of heaven. But what people disagree on is exactly what timeline Jesus is using. Anything from the next time they'll all meet up after this particular mission, right up to Jesus' return in glory. The coming of the Son of Man language, I think that has to be something more significant than just a kind of debriefing a few days later. But the point is, they won't have run out of places to go and people to tell until he comes. The mission is ongoing. And Jesus is only telling them to expect things he's already experienced. Verse 24, a disciple is not above his teacher, nor a servant above his master. It is enough for the disciple to be like his teacher and the servant like his master. If they've called the master of the house Beelzebul, how much more will they malign those of his household? Persecution is a family thing, and you're part of Jesus' family now, his household, which means if they persecute him, they will persecute you. In fact, it's slightly stronger than that, isn't it? Did you notice? How much more will they malign those of his household? I take it he means if they didn't hold back from insulting and maligning the head of the family, well, they're definitely not going to worry about bad-mouthing you. If the king, the good shepherd himself, is called the prince of demons, if the Son of Man is crucified before he comes in glory, well, his household will surely be persecuted as well. Persecution is a family thing. And I'm sorry, you know, maybe this all comes as a bit of a shock. It's quite a heavy topic, isn't it, for a Sunday afternoon? But it has always been the case for the family of God. Jesus said back in chapter 5, it was our theme verse today, blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Blessed are you when others revile you and persecute you and utter all kinds of evil against you falsely on my account. Rejoice and be glad, for your reward is great in heaven, for so they persecuted the prophets who were before you. Persecution has always been part of the story for God's messengers. It's inherent in the family business. You cannot avoid it. You can't do a better job of presenting the gospel, proclaiming the kingdom of heaven, than Jesus and his apostles did. And which, I don't know, I sometimes think like that. If I can just be more sensitive, more nuanced in how I communicate it, then I won't offend anybody. I can't do a better job than Jesus. They will be offended. They will persecute us. But verse 22 contains a great promise. The one who endures to the end will be saved. It doesn't take away the pain, does it? But Aisha does have a new family. Her old family has kicked her out, but she does have a new family. And the master of her new household, well, he knows what it means to be persecuted. If she endures to the end, he will save her. I imagine in the room today, there'll be a number of us here whose family relationships have suffered greatly because of an allegiance to Jesus. It doesn't take away the pain, but you have a new family, and the head of your household knows what it means to be persecuted. Endure to the end, and he will save you. If this particularly hurts for you right now, please do speak to somebody at the end of the meeting. Maybe grab a friend and talk about it. And we are going to think about this more next week as well. It comes up in the next passage again. But I want us to look at the next few verses before we finish. Persecution is actually God's pulpit. Persecution is a family thing. So finally, fear God, not persecution. Over the years, some people in our church family have confessed to me some quite unusual phobias. So we've had stickers, fear of stickers, crisps. My favourite one is submarines, which also includes other large, slow-moving, quiet objects. I thought those were quite fun phobias. Leupophobia is the irrational fear of wolves, which if you have, that photo is not going to help you. Apparently, someone with leupophobia will likely experience extreme and overwhelming feelings of fear, anxiety, and panic if they see, hear, or touch a wolf. Now, I don't totally understand where you draw the line for a phobia like this, because presumably if you're touching a wolf, then there is a rational reason to be slightly afraid. Anyway, what does a sheep naturally feel when it sees the wolf? Fear. What does a person feel when they are arrested? Fear. What's the natural feeling when you have to flee from one town to the next? I take it that's fear. But verse 26 starts with the word, so. They will persecute you, so have no fear of them. That's probably not what we'd have written, is it? But remember Jesus' logic here. Having shifted our perspective on persecution, its purpose, its role in the formation and identification of our heavenly family, because of that, have no fear of persecution. And the rest of our passage feels a little bit like a list, I think, when you read it through. I'm always hesitant to conclude that because sometimes I think that means I've just not understood the passage very well. But here, I think Jesus is sort of doing that. He's combating fear from lots of angles, one after the other. The rational response to persecution, it would be fear. Unless you have these truths to launch a counterattack. So here's a variety to choose from. Keep them at the ready. Let's have all the tools we need to rethink fear. Verse 26. So, have no fear of them, for nothing is covered that will not be revealed, or hidden that will not be known. What I tell you in the dark, say in the light, and what you hear whispered, proclaim on the housetops. I used to read that as meaning the persecution that happens under cover of darkness will all one day come to light and be judged. And that's true, but I don't think that's actually what Matthew means. The thing which in Matthew's gospel is always hidden is the gospel, and the kingdom of heaven is the hidden thing. God has hidden it from the wise and revealed it to little children. The kingdom of heaven is like leaven hidden in the flour and treasure hidden in a field. So the first motivation not to fear persecution is the fact that the hidden kingdom is at hand and will one day be revealed to everybody. Jesus has instructed them privately, and now they are able to shout it from the rooftops, and they don't need to fear, because they will be proven right. When the kingdom is revealed, they will be able to say, I told you so. That's reason number one. Verse 28, and do not fear those who kill the body, but cannot kill the soul. Rather fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. So here's what to do with your fear. Don't just swallow it back down or ignore it or try to push through it. Redirect it onto the God of heaven and hell. Jesus has spoken quite a lot about hell in Matthew's gospel so far. You've probably noticed that. The most compassionate person to ever live believes in hell. We must not conceal it when we bear witness to the kingdom of heaven. And we must not neglect it for our own sakes. Rightly fear the God who can destroy your soul and body in hell. And there's nothing that the world can threaten you with that even comes close to that. Verse 29, another truth for your arsenal. Are not two sparrows sold for a penny? And not one of them will fall to the ground apart from your Father. But even the hairs of your head are all numbered. Fear not, therefore. You are of more value than many sparrows. He's not just the God of heaven and hell. He's also your Father who knows you and cares for you. You are valuable to him. We've got our Weekends Away coming up on God's sovereignty. I hope that you're coming. When your heavenly Father is not just in control of the big picture and the overall direction of history, but of the minute detail of your life as well, then there is no reason to fear. Nothing can happen to you. They cannot touch a hair on your head apart from his sovereign plan. There's echoes here as well of Jesus' teaching on anxiety. and prayer that we had earlier in the book. Your Father loves you. He knows what you need before you even ask him. Fear not. And so finally, verse 32, everyone who acknowledges me before men, I also will acknowledge before my Father who is in heaven. But whoever denies me before men, I also will deny before my Father who is in heaven. Fear him who can destroy both soul and body in hell. Fear him whose verdict before the Father is your only hope of entering the kingdom of heaven. This is why Jesus is so unpopular with the religious elite. They have been replaced. There is no elite anymore. All that matters now is what Jesus thinks of you. Does that help? Not to fear persecution. It's quite quick fire application, isn't it? You might like to take each of those verses a bit slower this week. Maybe reflect on just a couple over the next few days. Jesus is equipping his disciples to go out amongst the wolves, minds and hearts at the ready to fear God instead of persecution. There's loads of stories that we could tell of all of this in action. People have told me more since this morning. But I thought, you know, I'd just remind you of one. We heard from our mission partners at the prayer nights this week, and they are proclaiming the kingdom of heaven to Muslims in the Middle East. And they have faced particular heartache this year, the death, the murder of a fellow worker, and the betrayal of a brother, somebody they had been discipling. They had to flee the city they were in. And maybe you would think, you know, that's fair reason to give up, to quit altogether. Why would you keep going? But they are trying to work out a way to go back. Are they mad? Is that completely nuts? No. They just fear God more than persecution. And thank God for those who, for the last 2,000 years, have made that same call, who have endured, who have kept bearing witness right to the end. Blessed are those who are persecuted for righteousness' sake, for theirs is the kingdom of heaven. Let's pray.